I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, as you know, we were chatting with Malcolm Drinkwater last weekend from Hill End.
History Hill at Hill End, yes.
That's exactly right, History Hill at Hill End. And as I said on last week's program, he's got so many interesting things to tell us about that place. We couldn't fit it into one show.
No.
So we're going to kick off with Malcolm Drinkwater from History Hill in Hill End. And then straight after that, Lynn?
You're going to be talking to Jeff Diaz, and the subject this week is the transport and main roads and the police and doing a bit of a blitz in Queensland. So he's just going to be talking about that.
Okay, yes. Weighing caravans, yes. Pulling them over and checking
and
out their
And it's probably
weights.
An ongoing thing.
I think it is. It's a pretty hot topic on Facebook, apparently.
Mm.
Okay. And then we're going to finish up with, after that,
well, we're going to be chatting to Margie from the Bass and Flinders Museum in Georgetown.
Absolute wealth of information, Margie.
Yes, she was a fabulous lady
and what a fabulous museum there in Georgetown. And also, Margie is the wife of a local Tasmanian talent. It doesn't come from Tasmania, but they're living there now, Vince Brothy.
Yes.
And Vince, we interviewed him and spoke about his music, and he's going to be coming up on a program either next week or the week after that. Now, also, apart from all of this, Lynn, what about the truck-friendly caravan road safety program? Now, what have they got going on for the school holidays?
They've got a thing for kids to do is, what truck is that?
That's right. Now, mums and dads, grandparents.
Yes, they can download
they
it
can
off.
Download that.
Off Facebook.
Yes.
Yes. And the kids can be entertained by, when the trucks go by, working out what truck it is.
That's exactly right. Instead of saying, are we there yet?
Or I spy.
Or any of those silly games, yes. What truck is that? That's going to be interesting for the kids.
Yes.
Now, apart from all these fabulous interviews, we've also got a great selection of music.
As requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, before we get on with the show, we're going to be starting immediately with part two of Malcolm Drinkwater at History Hill.
That's correct.
So what do you reckon, Lynn?
On with the show.
So what was the population back then? Because 51 hotels. Goodness
I was the one that, and I actually went to the local, went to the local licensing sergeant and said, right, number of licensed premises in your area, amount of people. And it didn't work out too far from what I'd calculated to be the population in the area. So you don't, to me, you didn't just say, oh, the census, and this, and this. There were ways. So the hotels I went to for different towns and found their populations that they definitely knew, right, and worked out a ratio of people per hotel.
Uh-huh.
And it worked out the same as all my other corroborated information. So about 30,000 in the district, yes, 8,500 within the centre of Hill End. Out of those 51 registered hotels, there were 28 in the centre of Hill End. But you had a bit like Sydney. You can't just look at Sydney with the tall buildings and say, that's Sydney, 4.5 million people live there.
Yeah, of course.
You look at the area.
Yep.
So you can't just look at Hill End and go, that town, mm-hmm, oh, there was only 8,500. No. People that gravitate to there for their work, their play. I mean, some of the play bits were great, but and I even put those sort of in the book, Hill End Hearsay. It's the games you played in the pub. So there's a pub talk. And they were stupid games, but they were things that people did to keep themselves amused before there was any such thing as TV or radio in a hotel.
Okay.
And there was always a piano in the corner,
yes,
so someone could go over and start to rat out a tune just like you'd see in the old American westerns.
Westerns, yeah.
But growing up in Hill End during the 1960s and 70s, was fun.
It was?
It was just fun. You just enjoyed it so much. You look forward to going to work with people. You look forward to going to the pub. You look forward to what the things that would happen. And unfortunately now that's all changed, gone, just okay, finished.
And so why did it change?
Well, you have to look at the just changing in society. I mean, it's probably one of the worst things that could happen is removing the dirt road. It was like a filter.
Okay.
It kept the people that were just here to become famous for living in Hillen away.
Okay.
I mean, at the moment, Hillen's just full of artists. Okay. And I've heard them quoting, and they're mostly quoting out of my books.
Okay.
So it's the flavour of the town has changed. Yes. The experts that are here now, they missed the boat. Okay. I mean, I've heard one of these artists who bought a place off Cud Denman, and it's insulting. I worked with Cud out the bush for 3 years, on and off. And this bloke talks about him in the first person. This bloke had never even knew Hillend existed. But of course, I've written about Cud heavily in the Hillend Hearsay book.
Okay.
So he can repeat
what he's read.
Yeah, those stories. And he makes out he knew them personally. And that's insulting.
Yes.
But there's very, very, very few bushmen left in the area.
And what's the population of Hillend now?
Around about, let's say, 180, something like that. There's bound to be official records.
Uh-huh.
But at the moment, there's so many little holiday places, it's hard to count them.
Right.
I used to, I've got that little Arab horse of mine. My young son reckons I only ride him often enough for him to play up.
Okay.
And occasionally I take him out on the Hillend and Tambour Common and ride through all the old sites that I knew. I'm always coming across new little shacks that are just popping up all over the place. And they're Sydney people that have bought
a bit of land. And
yeah. And I mean, you'd go back to the way things change. With the Hillend and Tambour Common, everyone had common cattle. And it was a big thing to have a biannual two-day muster and marking and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the national parks got rid of the cattle off the common. You know, health issues.
Yeah.
And there used to be common horses on the common as well,
yes.
Even goats. Well, they got rid of all that. In fact, at one stage there, not all that long ago, I just couldn't believe it, one of my horses got out, and the next minute the local cop is onto me, threatening to impound the horse and fine me for the horse being on the common. I say, actually, if you go back through the books, he's allowed to be there.
Okay. That's the local policeman that's here now?
Talk about a jerk, and I'll say that on radio.
Okay.
I have got it in writing from a magistrate using the phrase, he is trivial in the extreme in the execution of his duties.
Okay.
And for what? Booking my son for using his phone on a horse 4 kilometres out of town an hour and a half after he'd breathalysed him and he blew under, so he brought up the fact that he'd seen him an hour and a half previous using his phone on the horse. So it cost me $1,800 to take it to court and have it thrown out. And that's where the magistrate wrote, trivial in the extreme in the execution of his duties.
Did you get your $1,800 back?
No.
Or you lost it?
No.
You won the case?
It was worth it. That goes to the government. They never give you money back. You ever got money back from the government?
Well, no, I guess not. But, yeah. Fair enough. Well, I'm glad you took it on, and I'm glad you won.
Well, the annoying bit was that there were so many other people who had suffered tragically, and I mean tragically, as a result of this bloke's obsessive nature.
Okay.
And I wanted them to sort of come with me, but they're terrified of him.
Okay. How long's he been here?
Look, he's been here about 6 years. Okay. I mean, he won't let his high school kids go to high school. He believes they'll be corrupt.
Oh, wow.
So they're homeschooled while the high school school bus drives past his front gate every school day.
So where does he come from?
Well, put it this way. He was here. Look, I've forgotten whether it's... I think it's Hillston. Now, don't quote me.
Okay.
But he was only here a matter of weeks and the hotel got a phone call. And it was from the people at Hillston. They said, I hear you've got our old copper. Uh-huh. And they went, da-da-da-da. And they went... Tag, you're it. Good luck. hung up. and so, yes, he's unique. He's an anti-vaxxer.
Okay.
Not that, I mean, very, very religious. 9 kids.
Okay.
He's unique. Someone did burn his police car back a while back, but he didn't get the hint.
Okay.
That was gone.
That's another story.
Look,
what can people expect to see when they come into your museum? Just to get back to this now.
No worries. But gossip's always good.
Oh, fabulous.
It keeps the town alive.
You're fascinating to talk to, and I wish we had more time to talk to you. But with your museum, what can people expect to see when they come here?
If it was on the land of a gold field during the time of a gold rush.
Okay.
I mean, we've got everything that would be used out in the... Not everything. Okay. The majority of material used anywhere, okay. Underground, out in the bush, building houses. In fact, in the last documentary I did called After the Rush, I do a full segment on curing bark for a bark hut. Mm-hmm. In other words, you didn't just peel the bark off the tree. There was a special way of curing it.
Yes.
I've done a bit on frow splitting paling. So inside, I've got George Anderson's frow. George was born in 1914. He's been passed away for a while. I think 19, around there. Percy Flynn would have been born before that. But the point is, Percy Flynn's father made a frow for George Anderson's father.
Okay.
I've got that here, but I used a frow to help build the fence 50 years ago around the Catholic Church at Hill End. So if you go into the Catholic Church at Hill End and see those frow split palings, I was splitting those 50 years ago.
You did it.
For that fence. So a lot of the things in the museum have personal providence, okay. Personal association. Neville Judge was my main teacher of gold mining, interviewed in the Golden Days documentary of 1985. And before he went to a nursing home, he sharpened his Ballarat pick and hammer and tap drill steels to give to me because I might need them. And so they're in the museum.
Fantastic.
So the older people I had a wonderful relationship with. It's the younger ones that seem to want to become experts that are a little bit strange towards me. So that the negativity isn't from the genuine Hill End person. The negativity is coming from recent imports that haven't... I mean, in the latest documentary, I put a little bit in about my working underground. 1980, I'm underground. And John Singleton comes through with a camera crew.
Right.
With Rod McEwen, who singer-songwriter.
Yes.
One of his famous songs, Bonnie and Clyde. Mm-hmm. We can't play that one, though, because it's not Australian. No. But he was here.
Yes.
Either way... Rod interviewed me, and I'm pushing out a mine truck, that sort of thing. A lot younger, obviously, in 1980. So I put that little clip in the documentary because the newcomers go, oh, mate, he's never worked underground. We've never seen him underground.
Okay.
And again, I've got that same mine truck that I used on Hawkins Hill in the museum.
The museum. Now, what about your YouTube channels before we wind up, Malcolm? You've got a Facebook page and a YouTube channel. So let's try and direct some of our listeners to that.
Facebook is static advertisement. The YouTube is 19 at the moment. There will be a 20th, and it'll be a big one. There's 19 channels on it. It is Hill End Gold, which is the name of my first book in 1982, History Hill. Awful lot of people are using the word Hill End Gold, and effectively I'm the only one with copyright to that name. It's difficult to go onto YouTube and type in Hill End Gold. They're all up there before me.
Everything's there.
So
yes.
Hill End Gold, History Hill.
Yes.
I've numbered them from one, which is a welcome. And it shows you some things inside the museum like Chinese fighting swords.
Okay.
Original 1800. Beautiful, beautiful. It's one sword over your back that you pull out of a scabbard and it splits into two. And so he can fight with both hands. Because don't think the Chinese were this meek and mild, couldn't do anything. They were warriors. They were employed as mercenaries while people were taking spices back from Asia. And they were employed to guard the ship by attack from pirates. They weren't employing them because they were little cowards.
Okay.
They were fierce fighters. And go back to that Chinese program, the Gold Mountain. Pity about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a YouTube channel on it, Media Watch.
Okay.
The first one comes up with just how wrong that program on SBS was. Again, correct it. And I'm reading from other people's words. Mm-hmm. A barrister who died around 2017 had spent something like 16 years researching and writing the book on Gold Mountain. His wife's a barrister. SBS bought the rights and, as she said, butchered her husband's work.
Right.
And it is nothing like the true story.
Okay.
So we cover that. We're just literally reading out of her letter bit by bit and going, well, he's a mate of mine. Because you look at the museum and you go, oh, mate, he must be over 100 years old to have done all that. Well, collectively, I'm about 500 years old because it's not just me.
No.
I have developed, like this Don Laird down in Melbourne, I have developed a network of contacts who are experts in their own field.
Okay.
So when I want 100% sure that I've got it right, I involve them in their information.
Okay.
So when we look at firearms in Gold Mountain, I knew they were wrong, but I just wanted it in writing off someone who was head of the Antique Gun Collectors Association, and I got it.
To confirm it.
He said he watched that Gold Mountain for 5 minutes and turned it off because he saw the inaccuracies in all the firearms that were not just a couple of years out, but 50 years out of context, and right. thought, if they got that wrong, what else did
what
they,
else did
and
they
get
wrong?
It sold? There's the real, untold, true story.
Okay. So if they want to find the real story, they need to come to you. So how do they do that?
Well, we're open, again, on the YouTube channel, it says on the welcome section, but we're open every weekend and all school holidays from 10 till 3.
Okay.
It's cash only because I don't like giving banks like the Commonwealth Bank $8.4 billion a year profit because people touch a card.
Okay.
I keep it simple. One transaction into the bank.
Fabulous.
And I get the transaction to just keep it the way it was for 2,600 years.
Okay.
Cash.
There you go. Cash only, listeners, if you come to it, okay? Now, I'm going to wind this up. What can I play? It's got to be an Australian song. Have you got a favourite?
Okay, I think as you pointed out that the word awestruck comes into it.
Yes.
What rhymes with that is thunderstruck and motivational music working out the bush sometimes. If you had the radio turned on and something like AC/DC's Thunderstruck came on, you worked just a little bit faster.
Fabulous.
End,
all right.
End with a big bang.
End with a big bang. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more of Raymond Oz straight after Thunderstruck.
Thank you.
7th Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Oh, g'day, listeners. If you've just joined us, this is Roman Oz. My name is Phil C, and our guest on the program today, our regular guest, Mr. Jeff Diath from Check Weight. How are you going today, Jeff?
I'm going really well, Phil.
What have you got planned for us today?
Well, today, Phil, I thought we might talk about a bit of a hot topic on the Facebook groups over the last few months.
Right.
Is the transport and main roads and the police weighing vehicles and caravans in Queensland.
Okay. Now, I have read a little bit about this stuff on the forums. Very important topic, something everybody really needs to know because ignorance doesn't get you out of trouble, does it?
That's exactly right. Yep. And there's a bit about education that they're doing between the Queensland Transport and Main Roads and the police.
Yep.
But they are also issuing penalty infringement notices.
Okay.
I think one of the stats that I read, I think it was at Gympie, that they had 17 caravans pulled over, and mm-hmm. of those, 12 were either overweight or had bad weight distribution.
Wow. Okay.
And that's pretty consistent with the figures that I see. And, I mean, I'm seeing when I'm weighing the people who are wanting to be compliant, and generally I see 70 to 80% are either at or near one of the weight limits.
Yeah. And the problem is it is a fine line between being, under and over, isn't it, sometimes? It can be something as simple as we've discussed in the past about just redistributing the weight, but then in other cases it can be that you are just blatantly overweight. I mean, I've read on some of these forums where, police are pulling people over and making them empty their water tanks because they're so overweight before they let them travel on.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the water tanks. I've had mixed reports on the water tanks.
Okay.
I actually think water gives you stability, and if you were to have an accident after you've emptied the water tanks, then maybe they're liable. But
wow.
I've certainly heard of people having to take things out of their caravan to be compliant.
Uh-huh.
I did hear about a horse float
right.
that was pulled over. It was one of these big horse floats that has a couple of horses and a kitchen and a bedroom in it.
Yes.
And when they pulled it over, this is again in Queensland, they did get them to empty the water, and it was still over the 3.5 tonne.
Wow.
What's really surprising there was that there was no horses in it.
So you imagine, goodness me, how much does your average horse weigh? Imagine if they had a horse or two in there, he would have been in trouble. He would have been riding the horse home and leaving everything on the side of the road.
Well, I believe a horse, I'm not a horsey person, but,
yep.
700-800 kilos per horse.
Yeah.
I've only weighed about 3 horse weights myself.
Uh-huh.
And one was a dual horse boat with a kitchen and a bedroom.
Yes.
She was looking to see whether she could actually take two, and we determined that she couldn't. She could only take one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because she had needed to take water and feed, and then the saddles, and then their own food and things like that. That was a sleeper. So yeah, so it's buy beware when you're buying these big caravans, but even a little caravan for horse loads and other things that you just can't have your kitchen and take it to.
Yeah. So do you think most of the problem is that people that buy second-hand caravans, that obviously people have pre-loved and put a lot of extras in them to suit what they want to do, is the issue? I mean, they look at it and they think, gee, this is a great van. They look at a compliance plate and it says it weighs X, when in fact the previous owners had all these additional things, put on to suit their personal needs, and all of a sudden it doesn't weigh X anymore, it weighs Y.
I think, that's a good point. And, second-hand vans are a major problem, and we might talk about that in a full episode if you like one day.
Yes.
But yeah, certainly, you know, anything that you add, even if it's a new van,
yep,
and it's weighed at the dealership,
yes,
when it's manufactured,
mm-hmm,
and then it goes to the dealer. Sorry, it's weighed at the manufacturer.
Yes.
Then it goes to the dealer.
Yes.
And you want an extra battery, an extra solar panel, and a bigger mattress, and, you know, something else. All that extra is coming out of your payload.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it adds up very quickly.
It does.
You know, so, you know, you've got to be really careful what mm-hmm we're adding.
Yep.
And especially, you know, if you've, you know, got kids and going around Australia or something like that, you've got to be very minimalist in what you're taking because everything weighs something.
Okay.
But, you know, the Queensland exercise, I think, is a good thing. I think it's raising awareness. There's a lot of talk now on the forums about weighing and getting weighed and, you know, having some knowledge. And, you know, I mean, just this is a New South Wales road that I pulled off New South Wales road safety. Between 2016 and 2020, so 5 years,
yep,
there was 215 accidents involving vehicles coming a caravan on New South Wales.
Wow.
Roads, and these crashes resulted in 17 fatalities and 116 serious injuries. So if you think it's not an issue, just because every caravan crash doesn't get on, it doesn't yeah mean it's not happening.
Yeah. Look, the thing is, I've just come back from a trip, and I spoke to a fellow who was blatantly overweight. I could tell he was blatantly overweight by just the size of the van and all the. One particular fellow, I spoke to two people while I was away. One guy had 6 water tanks on his caravan. He bought this caravan brand new. 6 water tanks, grey water tank, solar panels. It had everything that opened and closed. He said, oh, but I've put lithium on there to, you know, compensate. And I thought, well, a couple of lithium batteries hardly compensate for 6 water tanks. But he just said, oh, well, you know, I've never had an accident. I'm not likely to, and worry about that when it happens. But as you said, I mean, this caravan, the caravan alone was over $100,000. And if he was involved in an accident that was his fault, what you're saying is the insurance company would just go, well, you're overweight, bad luck, and he would have lost a lot. And God forbid if he was to have injured or killed someone. So,
well, and that's the issue. I mean, you know, yes, you know, there is the fines and insurance, but if you're, you know, injured or, you know, kill somebody else or injure somebody else, mm-hmm, then there's a whole heap of legal ramifications to that as well.
Yes.
And, look, thankfully, a lot of caravan accidents don't result in injury or an accident.
Yep.
But, you know, when you see these pictures on Facebook, I mean, I shared one a few weeks ago of a caravan near Katherine in Northern Territory. And, I mean, there was nothing left. So, at the worst, you know, you've lost all your possessions in the caravan. You've got nowhere to stay. And you've ruined your holiday or your big lap or your dream trip around Australia.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that's just a minor inconvenience, really, compared to the other things that will happen.
Okay.
And if they find out you're overloaded, and I follow Clayton's Towing, you know, on Facebook. I follow Clayton's Towing in Queensland, and they pick up all the caravans on the Bruce Highway, and one of the, you know, they're really good citizens. Every caravan, they put it in their container, and that's so they can weigh it.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up all the pieces off the side of the road, the caravan, and they put them all in a big container, and then they weigh them.
Yep.
So if the insurance company or the police go, there's something fishy here, insurance company can get those figures. And I've heard people say, oh, you know, well, they can't get everything. But I've spoken to 3 different insurance assessors. Two of whom were retired, and basically they backed me up. You know, they do weigh them, and if the accident weight was a contributing factor to the accident,
yep,
then you'll find in your policy that you may get that denied.
Wow. So this is really, really something that you can't just shrug your shoulders and walk away from, is it? You really have to know whether or not you are legal when you do, you know, to decide to take a caravan and a car, four-wheel drive, whatever, on a trip, even if you're only just towing it locally up the road. You really want to make sure that you've ticked all your boxes. And the thing is, Jeff, it is such a confusing area, isn't it? It's very, very confusing. You do have a majority, or a minority, I should say, of people who blatantly don't care and prey on their own ignorance should they be involved in an accident. You know, and this other fella, I've never had an accident, I'm not going to have an accident. But then the majority of people, and there's a lot of people out there that are doing the caravanning thing, they're the ones that want to do it correctly because, you know, they've invested a lot of money and God forbid they wouldn't want to be involved in an accident. So it's confusing. What's the best thing that you can tell the people so that we can assist them if they are just completely unsure of what they should or shouldn't be or can and can't do when towing a caravan?
I would agree, Phil. I mean, most people want to be compliant and want to educate themselves, but it is very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So at CheckWeight, we've got a few free resources available on our website,
right,
as well as an online course.
Uh-huh.
So the very first step I would say is go to our website, which is checkweight.com.au, so checkweight.com.au.
Yes.
And up the top right, there's a button that says free report. So if you download that free report, you just put your email in and you'll automatically get a PDF email to you,
mm-hmm,
explaining all the acronyms.
Right.
So that's a good first step.
Okay.
Apart from that, we have lots of good blog articles. So each of our blog articles, mm, and you know, we've some of the sessions we've done have sort of coincided with some of the subjects in my blog articles.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we created at CheckWeight last year, and it was actually a few customers, but it was actually somebody on a forum who said there should be an online course you should do about weight.
Right.
And I read this and I turned to my wife and I said, got all this knowledge in my head and I can only weigh so many people.
Yes.
So we got together, we created an online course. We had it videoed professionally and edited professionally.
Yes.
So it's none of this, you know, phone, video where we can't hear the person talking for the wind.
Uh-huh.
And so we created this course and it's got about 40 minutes of video and, you know, there's a heap of downloads, which are PDF format, which you can download, print, or save to your computer.
Okay.
So the best way to grab this course, if you would like, is actually through the Roman Oz website.
Yes.
You can get it through there. You've got a little, on your romanoz.com.au website, there's a little box there, Caravan Weight Made Easy.
Mm-hmm.
You click on that and
yep,
buy the course. It's only $99.
Yes.
And I've got 100% money back guarantee. So if you don't, you watch all the videos, do all the downloads, and you don't think you've got your value, I'll refund that value.
Wow.
Confident I am in that you'll get value.
Yes.
I'll refund 100% of cost. But you can't cheat. I can see whether you watched all the videos or not.
So
you've got to complete every video and download.
Okay.
And yeah, look, I've had really, really good feedback on it. People have then understood, if they go to a weigh bridge, they understand after going over the weigh bridge more of the information they get. Of course, that people not buy vehicles or yes, buy vehicles or caravans the same because of the information in the course.
Okay.
Because they get to understand it.
Fabulous.
So that's the best way to buy the course is just go through the romanoz.com.au.
Absolutely.
And click on the Caravan Weights Made Easy.
Fabulous. And if they don't find that they've been fully satisfied or if they're just still blatantly confused, you'll give them either a refund or you'll make sure that they understand anything they're not sure of.
That's exactly right.
Fabulous. Matey, I think we're going to wind this one up now. What can we play? You know, now we always play an Aussie song. What's your song selection for this one?
I thought we'd go with some Solid Rock by Goanna.
Solid Rock by Goanna. Well, there you go, listeners. Now, you stick around. We're going to be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. What are you going to talk about next week, Jeff?
Okay, well, I thought what we might talk about next week is actually how we weigh at CheckWeight. We're a mobile weighing company.
Okay.
I thought I'd just explain the things that we do
okay.
That are a little bit different, and you might just not realise what you get from a professional mobile layer.
Fabulous. All right, listeners, well, there you go. Stick around for Goanna's Solid Rock. We'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after that. And don't forget to check out Jeff next week talking about what he does whilst weighing your car and or caravan. Jeff, thank you so much for your time today, mate. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Bill. Travel safe and enjoy.
Okay. Back with more Roaming Oz straight after this.
Not in a hurry anyway. You can feel the endlessness to come another light of day. We're talking about a chosen place. You wanna sell it in a marketplace? Well, we're just a minute now.
Sacred ground.
Good afternoon, listeners. Phil C here. This is Raymond Oz, if you've just joined us, and we are in Georgetown at the Bass and Flinders Maritime Museum, and I am chatting with Margie. How are you today, Margie?
I'm really well, Phil. It's really nice to have you and Lynn here with us visiting.
So thank you so much.
Into our museum.
I will indeed, but I should just let the listeners know, because we interviewed your husband earlier.
Yes.
That is the famous Vince Brothy. And, of course, he's a local talent, local musician, yes, photographer, artist.
Yes.
And a man of leisure now, because you're down here working.
Yeah, I am.
He said you're the younger member of the team.
I am the younger member of the team. So, yes, I know. When COVID hit, we had to reinvent ourselves because no longer could we be performers on the road in early childhood.
Yes.
So I met Craig that works here, that volunteers here, that you're going to talk to later.
Okay.
Who helped build our Norfolk that's in our museum,
okay,
here. He went sailing on the Elizabeth, and he brought this museum alive to me. And so I came here volunteering, first of all, just because I was starving of meeting people, because
okay,
usually we travel and meet people like you are.
Yes.
So I just had the visitors come to me for a change, and I get to chat to them.
Fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah, so how long have you been at the museum?
I've been here 2 years now.
Right, so. Okay. Mm. And was that the only reason? You were just starving for I guess, interaction?
Yeah,
do you really love them?
I love history as well because we're, as Vince would have told you, we got to live here for a month and look at the history of the area and just learn all about this amazing town, you know? Like
yes,
the only one left, Sydney Town, Georgetown, Hobart Town, we're the only town left.
So, yes.
Yeah, so they were the first three establishments. So
okay,
we were established here in Georgetown in 1804. Mm. So I have a great love of history. So it just extends into this museum to be able to share that with people that come through visiting. So.
Okay. And look, we've only just walked in here just a moment. It's fabulous.
Mm.
Now tell us all about the displays. Let's start with the Norfolk.
Yeah,
let's find out all about that.
Well, that's where the museum started as well. So
okay,
the Norfolk was a boat that, when you talk to Craig, he helped build that with Byrne Cuthbertson, and they took 3 years to build it. The interior and exterior are one hewn and pine log.
Wow.
So, and then the masts and the booms are celery top, which is another Tasmanian timber that
right,
has got really small little limbs and great for those masts and mm-hmm, booms. While they were building that, he went off and reenacted Bass's journey down the east coast in a whaling boat similar to the Elizabeth that we have on display here.
Okay.
And that was 6 weeks of rowing and sailing from Sydney to Western Port, which is almost into the Bay of Melbourne. And he said it was a boy's own adventure. I'm not sure.
6 weeks of rowing and sailing. And
yeah,
how did they navigate?
They were just offshore, so they weren't that far offshore
in that little boat.
No, they came in every night and slept somewhere every night. But they sailed every day.
Okay,
but differently in the Norfolk was built to reenact Bass and Flinders' voyage of circumnavigating Tasmania.
Right.
So and that's so that took 3 years to build, and it's built in the. There was never a painting or a drawing of the original Norfolk. The original Norfolk came from Norfolk Island.
Right.
It was on Norfolk Island. They were running out of food supplies in the late 1700s. And so they put together, they think, a boat that was made from one of the first fleet boats that was wrecked on Norfolk Island,
yes,
the Cirrus,
yes,
and local timbers. They brought that into harbour in Sydney, and the governor said, I'm sorry, boys, you can't take that back to Norfolk Island. Convicts will escape. But I just happened to have Bass and Flinders that want to go exploring. So he went and gave the Norfolk to Bass and Flinders to go exploring and to see if it was an island at all. So
okay. That's
how they got that boat. So, Byrne and a crew of six, with Craig included, reenacted that voyage. They had their own adventure. That boat, like all the reenactments, they're running close to time, you know, to get up to Sydney to start it. They couldn't lose a day. So they hit seas as big as the seas that we lost the sailors in the Sydney to Hobart yacht race.
Wow.
They got hit by a rogue 45-degree angle wave that knocked them right over. The mast went right over under the water. Then she came back up again.
Oh.
But when you think about this boat, it's got no motor on board. It's only under sail. And so they just had to hang five. You know, they hand pump the water out. Craig says he's in the galley and the pin comes out. So he says nothing like a drowning man get a bucket and bail out. So they were bailing out. So they just rocked around. They lost their long wave radio equipment. So they Bega suddenly realised something's wrong. They haven't radioed in to say, give their location. So rescue planes start going. On the third day, they realise there's a plane circling them. Oh. They go, that might be for us. So they've got shortwave radio, so they get on and see Orion from Adelaide that's got heat detectors, so they've found them. And they have said that they radioed down to say, you know, if that's the Norfolk below me, can you shine a torch on your mainsail? Craig says that six torches hit that mainsail in a flash. And then he says, we just want to know that you're all okay. And he said, yes, we are all okay. They just lost a sleeping bag and obviously radio equipment. He said, do you know, he said, I'll let your families know. Byrne's wife said he knew he was okay because he hadn't let the flare go. Like, how bad does it have to get? So they said, do you know where you are? And he said, well, we've got a sextant out and we're trying to work it out. And we think that we're 50 nautical miles off Bermagui. And he said, I'll just check for you. He says, you're 48.
Oh, wow.
So, like, Byrne was an amazing sailor. And I didn't get to meet him, but an amazing captain and an amazing sailor on to have as your captain on board. So Craig said if you said run a sail up or run a sail down, you were on it straight away. Wow. So
amazing. Yeah. So how long did that journey take?
That took 3 months to go up to Sydney, come down, go circumnavigate Tasmania and then back up to Sydney. And then Matthew Flinders had mapped up as far as Hervey Bay, so they continued on up into Queensland and mapped up, called into Hervey Bay before coming back to Hobart. And then the boat sat for quite a few years because this was all in 1998, the year that 200 years later. Mm-hmm. So the boat sat for nearly 7 years then, waiting for a location where it could come. Byrne really wanted it to come north because there wasn't anything to commemorate Bass and Flinders in the north. And Bass and Flinders spent 17 days up the Tamar or the Kanemaluka, exploring, looking for water, looking for settlements. And so he wanted it to be up here north. So this building was an old picture theatre, and at the time it was empty, and the local Gunn family helped support to purchase the building and to, along with locals, to get it all located here. So in she came.
So how did you get it into the museum? You obviously didn't sail it in waiting for a big tide. How did you get it in?
They had a big crane and they lowered in by crane. So the building wasn't tall enough for a mast to go in. So they got a big grant to extend the building at the back, and then they got a crane, which they had to use next door's yard because we haven't got anywhere. So they had to use next door's yard. Luckily, it had a big space and they craned it in and lowered down into the museum. And then the museum was really built around that. So built a wharf off the side of it, and then the other boats started to come in. The Elizabeth came in, and other boats came in. So amazing. So we're very lucky to have all those.
And you've got some smaller boats in there as well. You've got the Tom Thumb, which is only about 8 or 9 feet. So we're going from the biggest one to the smallest one.
Yes.
What was the Tom Thumb?
Well, the Tom Thumb, everyone, like, if they grew up in New South Wales like I did, when they went to primary schools, they learned that Bass and Flinders circumnavigated Tasmania in the Tom Thumb.
Wow.
Well, that's not true.
Okay.
But it doesn't state the name of the Norfolk in any of those social studies, because I've looked it up because I was curious. So the Tom Thumb was actually a boat that Bass and Flinders used in the Georges River in Sydney to go exploring, and they did get down as far as Wollongong in the Illawarra to go exploring and checking out countryside with that. When the boys did the reenactment, they used the Tom Thumb as a life-saving boat on board the Norfolk, so it was strapped onto the side and went on the journey with them.
As a rescue, like, in case the big boat went down. So they were going to row this tiny little boat.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. That was going to be the rescue boat. I'm not sure how good that would have been. Craig will tell you.
So how many was on the Norfolk when they did this reenactment?
They had six crew on board.
Six crew.
Yeah, so three on, three off. And it's under tiller. When you have a look on the boat's under tiller, not under a wheel.
Okay.
And so it's got to be actively engaged all the time.
So I couldn't imagine six of them in the Tom Thumb.
No.
There would have been a few arguments.
there might have been. No, I think they're all good.
No doubt. So what about the Admiral? Now, that's a 28-foot rowing ferry.
It is, that's right. That's one of the oldest surviving wooden boats here in Australia.
Okay.
And that was found up on the Hastings River in Taree. Someone was going up the river and they rang Byrne and said, "Byrne, I think we found the Admiral." Luckily, it survived because it's got hewn pine and she-oak and blue gum, and it was made in 1865 in Hobart as a water taxi. There was a bit of one-upmanship, you know. There was the Cormorant going already there, but they named this one the Admiral because you can't go higher than the Admiral. So there's a bit of rivalry in town, can we say, between the people that were doing ferrying across the river at those times. But, yeah, we're very lucky to have that. And so that boat, when they picked it up in Taree, it weighed 3 tonne. It had been converted to a fishing boat and had lots of different lives. It had changed its name. So when they brought it back down, they pulled it apart, restored it, cut the back off it, took the tops off, you know, a lot of work. And then eventually it got brought into the museum here upstairs. So
Wow. So apart from these four magnificent vessels, what else can people expect to see when they come to the museum?
Well, they're lucky enough to... Well, the big thing that I think is wonderful here at the museum is the fact that you can go on board the Norfolk and you can go down inside the cabins in the Norfolk. So it's not roped off and you can't go and see. So that's a big highlight for here. If people are interested in more history about Bass and Flinders, we actually have a movie about Flinders that you can't see anywhere else in Australia. It's here.
Right.
The other boats that we have, we've got a small little boat, the Melanie, that's made by our local school children.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a Sea Scout boat, the KD, that the Sea Scouts used to train in. We actually had some Sea Scouts in earlier this year and they were all excited to see that boat and they're going, "Oh, but ours is fiberglass." I wouldn't like to lift that boat. It's wood and it's really solid and heavy. People have donated canoes and, yeah, little sabs and all sorts of boats. So there's lots and lots of boats in here to see. So and just the history, you know, to pick up that history. And we take time to talk to people when they come in.
Yes.
We fill them in a bit on the history of Bass and Flinders, or if they're interested in boats, we talk about the boats and how the boats were made. And and then they can come up on board with us. So,
fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable.
No, but it's just it's a great experience. We're a little bit hidden
down
around the corner of the road. People find us a little bit hard to find. But, but once you come in, we had a French lady came in. She goes, "Whoa, like a magic surprise." So, you know, like it's when you go through those doors, you're not really, you don't know what's going to be in here from the outside.
So, that's absolutely right.
So we're so lucky to have it in here. So
I was amazed when I walked in because the first thing you see when you walk through the door is the Norfolk's
there. And we're lucky we've got a great team of volunteers. We've got Ivy, she's my brains trust if it's history in relation to Bass and Flinders, and then we've got Craig if it's relation to the boat and the sailing or the making of the boat. So
so
it's great to have them. People just sort of love to hear, you know, those stories from a person, and they love listening to Craig because like it's first-hand experience. Mm. He did that and touched it and made it and things like that. So we're very lucky to have him here as well.
Mm. Well, we're going to be chatting with Craig a little bit later on in the afternoon.
Yeah,
he's going to be on the program with us as well. Margie, thank you so much for
your
time.
All right, it's been a pleasure. It's just wonderful.
It's been a wealth of information for both of us.
Yeah, and the more that people know about us, the better. Come and have some time.
Now, I've got to end this segment, and as my listeners know, I always play a song at the end of each segment.
Mm-hmm.
What song can I play for you today?
Well, can I request that you play a song called Letter to Anne, which is a song my husband wrote, Vince wrote, about the letters that Matthew Flinders wrote back to his wife Anne.
Okay.
And it's about, and it tells the story of his adventures here in Australia and just gives you a feeling of the distance that they must have felt, you know, in those times.
And this was written, of course, by your husband, Vince.
Yeah.
And it's on his album, Between the Moon and the Sun.
Yeah, which the local council here backed for us to do a residency here. And then they actually backed to put that album together, which was just a most wonderful experience. And that's why we live here now.
Absolutely. Fabulous. Okay. Well, that's what we're going to do then. Thank you so much, Margie. Thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Not a problem. Okay.
We'll be back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after Letters to Anne from Vince Brophy's Between the Moon and the Sun. Mm.
My dearest darling, and I write to you a letter from across the sea. Tonight we anchor on 40 latitude at a port called Arimpo. Dined upon wild river swan, Mr. Bass and I hear the French are here as well. Could we be at war? Starlight, star bright, I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England tonight. My dearest darling, and I write to you from two oceans away, from this land of Eden I call Australia. To navigate for 2 long years through homesick eyes, for home I sail in 1803. But you, my dearest, best love. Starlight, star bright, I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England tonight. I sail for England October that year, but my boat was found to leak. I sailed into the Isle de France, but a prisoner I was kept. No one knew of my life for these long, long years. My dearest darling, and I write to you from the Isle de France. It is November 1805, I am imprisoned on this isle. They say the war still rages on, I must the prisoner stay. For my cause of science, from Lincolnshire. Starlight, star bright, I wish you were with me tonight. Starlight, star bright, I wish I were in England. Starlight, star bright, I wish you were with me tonight. I were in England tonight. I wish I were in England tonight.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.